We have problems talking about race in America. While some talk, others live it. We have problems talking about white privilege in America. While some talk, others live it. Trying to reach across the black-white divide contains a risk. Hey, anger will get you nowhere. Oh, look at how racially sensitive I am. Quit patronizing me. Maybe you should talk less and listen more. Do you know anything about our history? Who owns history? Hey, there's been lots of progress. You have to agree with that, right? These well-meaning words collide all the time. You've probably heard them before. But right now, there is a rethinking of reconciliation, and people, white and African-American, are taking more risks to reach each other in words, spoken and written. We have made it our business to cover these conversations and even to instigate some of them. A few months ago, a thought-provoking essay ran on Time.com, and it caught our eye. It was written by best-selling author Jodi Picoult. Her latest book, Small Great Things, has her speaking from the point of view of some African-American characters. Not many authors do this successfully, but Picoult's book sold well and was well-reviewed. She wrote an essay for Time about her experiences confronting race and racism as a privileged white woman in America. Her words were perfect, uncomfortable truths for our reporting project. Conversations and thoughts about race that take writers out of their day-to-day lives. Did Picoult cross a bridge? Is she just looking for the Sensitive White Woman Award? Well, she took the risk. You can decide.
When my son was 4, we were crossing the Dartmouth campus when we passed an African-American student. "Mommy," Kyle asked, "who is the tan man?" He said this loud enough for the young man to overhear. I turned 10 different shades of red and fell all over myself trying to diffuse the awkwardness. I told my son that although people came in different shades, we're all the same. I told him I was colorblind and he should be too. I was sure this was the right response. I was wrong. A few years before that encounter on the Dartmouth Green, I tried to write about racism. I'd written multiple books from the points of view of people I was not. Holocaust survivors, rape victims, school shooters, men. Why was it so hard for me to write from the point of view of someone black? Because race is different. Racism is different. It's hard to discuss without offending people. As a result, we often choose not to discuss it at all. I could not ask my readers to reevaluate their own prejudice and privilege until I confronted my own, which is why this novel was the hardest book I've ever written. I began by thinking back to my childhood in suburbia. I didn't have black friends, but surely that was because I could count on one hand the number of African Americans in my school of 2,400, right? My parents were Jewish, upper middle class, generous and kind and not prejudiced. Yet I could distinctly remember watching the evening news as my parents offhandedly referred to an African American on the screen with the Yiddish word schwarz. At the time, I thought it was simply descriptive. It literally means black. But now, I saw it clearly as a pejorative, a label that separated them from us. I reflected on my relationship with race as I grew older. The first black friends I made went to Princeton with me. There was one girl, Lisa, a poet in my creative writing class, whose writing I loved. We'd walk back to campus after our workshops. I learned about her upbringing in suburban Chicago, which sounded a lot like my own. I talked to her about boys, about our professors, about writing, but never about race. I had been the first to praise myself for not seeing color when I was at college. How open-minded I was! How racially progressive! But was that true? Or had I just been ignorant? Had I ever bothered to ask Lisa what it felt like to be in her shoes? To be the only black person in a seminar? To feel the professor's eyes light on you whenever a writer of color was mentioned? No, because I never had to. I started reading books and articles by social justice educators and activists. Michelle Alexander, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Beverly Daniel Tatum, Melissa Harris Perry, Debbie Irving, Peggy McIntosh, Shelley Tuchluk. I met with women of color who graciously overlooked my ignorance and shared with me the stories of their lives, from their fears for their children to the microaggressions they face daily. A woman of color my age asked me how often I talked about racism with my kids at the dinner table. "Occasionally," I replied, which, to be honest, was an overestimation. I asked her how often she talked about racism at the dinner table. "Every night," she said. Here is the grievous mistake I had made for the majority of my life. I assumed that racism is synonymous with bias. Yet you could take every white supremacist and ship him off to Mars, and you'd still have racism in the world. That's because racism is systemic and institutional, but it is both perpetuated and dismantled in individual acts. Racism is the white lady standing in line at the bus stop who moves her purse to the opposite side when a black man comes to wait beside her. It's the fact that if you're black and convicted of a crime, justice may not be so just. It's the realization that although people of color can likely name three shampoos that white people use, the reverse is rarely true. One of the many things I've learned is that the role of the white ally isn't to be a savior or a fixer. It's to find other white people and make them understand that many of the benefits they've enjoyed in life are a direct result of the fact that someone else did not have those same benefits. Once I started to see my privilege more clearly, I realized my role was to open the eyes of people who looked like me. For 47 years of my life, I did not discuss race. Now I talk about it all the time. Yes, it is often awkward and uncomfortable. But you know, comfort isn't an entitlement. In fact, many people of color feel uncomfortable every day. In other words, if starting this dialogue makes you uneasy, it means you're doing something right.
That's Jodi Picou, author of Small Great Things. Her full essay appeared on Time.com last October.
This is James, and I'm calling from the University of Pittsburgh. Every day, I try to learn more about other cultures through books, conversations, and multimedia. It's difficult, but your views and biases can only change with knowledge.
My name's Samantha from Missouri. I grew up in a pretty solidly white southern town. I've always been a person who tries to be as progressive as possible, but some things you just don't even realize are ingrained from your childhood. There have been times in my life where I instinctively chose to walk on the side of the street with white people as opposed to any other race. I realize little things like this as soon as they happen and think about it logically, but the instinct is there, and that's a lot harder to change than anything else.
From Honolulu, as a child, I'm black from the American South. I noticed that I had a preference for partners with lighter skin. Coming from a family that runs the gamut of skin shades, that did not sit well with me. So I made an effort to point out beauty in every darker potential partner I saw. We want to hear from you about your biases, what you've discovered about yourself. We want you to participate and tell your story. Visit thetakeaway.org/truths and tell us who you'd like to have a difficult talk about race with. It could be a friend, a family member, a coworker. We want to hear it. And as always, call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or join the conversation on The Takeaway's Facebook page. We're going to make this country better. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.